This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, December 14th, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly, and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Good to be here again.
Yes, it is. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. It's part of our regular educational program. Our mission is to not only explore science and spirituality, it is to also explore and empower the human spirit. So we try to have topics on that do just that. Tonight, we will be talking about addictions and the relationships they create. We'll get to that in just a moment. We'd like to welcome those who are listening to our live program and those who are listening to the archives after the fact. If you'd like to be a part of this, ask questions, you can certainly do that in the chat room. You can also call us. The number's there on your screen, 714-459-3973. And, of course, Reverend John Hightower will be there to screen your calls and to let us know that you're on the line. So we appreciate that. It's, of course, halfway through the month. The holiday season is coming up quickly, and so we'll have some points on that tonight as well, right, Vicki?
We will. We're going to talk about the rites of signature, which is, in layman's terms, solstice.
Right. The winter solstice is upon us.
And that would be the lunar prevailing.
Luna prevailing, yeah. The moon.
The moon.
The moon's ruling.
It is so. Yeah, we're going to have some really good tips later on about how to prepare. And matter of fact, our show is on that evening of the solstice, so very fortunate for us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just give people some tips, things that they can get ready, prepare for, and we'll have ourselves a little get-together. Mm-hmm. Be great.
Yes, so we'll talk about that after a bit. Tonight, our main topic is on addictions and the relationships they create. And so this was, of course, by request.
It was so. Mm-hmm. Last week we had a request that to talk about addictions. And, you know, it was difficult. We didn't quite get an angle on what was asked of us. So we're going to just go with what we've talked about, Doug, and our take on it.
Yeah, so we'll kind of start, and we're going to kind of take two tracks, perhaps simultaneously, but the two tracks are the addicts, which can include a number of things. We're going to focus primarily on alcoholism and drug addiction. Those are the things that really ruin lives. And we're also going to talk about it from the other side of that coin, which is those who are not addicted but are in these addicted relationships. I don't want to confuse addictive relationships with those people who are in a relationship with an addict or an alcoholic. A little bit of a different meaning there. So, you know, one thing, both Vicki and I have had a lot of experience in this area in different ways, and I'm sure a lot of listeners have as well. And one thing that I want to say first and foremost is to those addicts, alcoholics who are battling this disorder, my heart goes out to them. You know, I have an enormous amount of human compassion for them and their plight. And so I just want to state that, you know, I'm not an alcoholic or a drug addict, never have been. I am really speaking from the other side of that coin, having been in alcoholic relationships and literally writing the book on alcoholic relationships, which I did many years ago. And I'm going to mention this several times throughout the program, because if you are a listener who is in an alcoholic relationship, this is not for those who are alcoholics or addicts, and it doesn't have to be an alcoholic relationship. It can be a relationship with an addict. If you want more information, you want to know more about it, then you should visit empoweredrecovery.com. That is one of my sites. My book is on there, The Alcoholic Relationship Survivor's Guide, and you know, you can acquire it there. There's a forum there, a lot of help there. This whole Empowered Recovery thing was actually started 10 years ago. We're actually entering our 11th year, and So, you know, a lot of wisdom, a lot of help for those who are in alcoholic relationships or in drug addicted relationships. Again, not for the addict or the alcoholic, but instead for those who are in those relationships.
Well, this is a particularly sensitive time of year, I must say, that, you know, as we near the holidays, and I think, you know, as we've talked before, the whole year can be hard if you're, you know, dealing with someone with addictions. But, you know, we come and nobody wants to rock the boat. You know, you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. You want to get together with family. So even if it's not that you're in a relationship with someone who is an addict, I tell you, there's just about one in every family, mm-hmm. because no one goes untouched. No one goes untouched in the matters of addiction. I truly believe that. Everyone is touched in some way, mm-hmm. With addictive behavior, mm-hmm. with prescription drugs. It doesn't have to be alcohol or, you know, methamphetamines. It can very well be gambling, pornography. There's all kinds of habitual behaviors that are very damaging to not only to the individual in self-destruction, but to people they love and family members. So this is a tough time of year. It's a tough subject, you know, and we have lots of compassion.
It is a tough subject. And as we get through some of the different things, we're not going to hold back the realities of this whole thing. But we're going to hopefully provide some comfort, some direction, some ideas as to what can do. Now, Kathy, I think you are on it. Go ahead, Vicki.
No, I was just Kathy just mentions the smoking thing.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. Everybody has an addiction in some way, whether you're conscious of it or not. We're all dealing with addictions in all kinds. I always say it's the addiction of choice.
Right.
You know, it's if that's your choice, and as long as it doesn't impact others and it doesn't bring harm to others. Of course, there's a lot of argument there on smoking. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, I look at things that alter behavior, mm-hmm. and that alter mental capacities and that alter behavior that affect and impact other people. And as much as we could sit here and talk about smoking, I don't think it's on the top of my list for behavioral issues.
Let's just get those kinds of addictions out of the way, smoking and anything else related. We're not talking about drugs. I'm not even talking so much about marijuana. But, you know, when we talk about addictions, we're talking about heroin, cocaine, all those types, alcoholism, things that really affect behavior. When it comes to things like, go ahead.
Sorry, Catherine just mentioned smoking alters my behavior in the
okay.
chat, and I'm thinking, what's she smoking?
All right, yeah, really. You going to share? All right, let's talk about smoking. Okay, if you are a smoker and you don't want to smoke anymore, then I'm going to give you the way to quit. All right, so brace yourself. Here's how
Sorry.
You quit. Yeah, you're raining on my parade here.
Sorry.
All right. If you're a smoker and you don't want to smoke anymore, then this is what you do. Stop it. Now, you may think that was a joke, but I'm telling you, it's not. You know, the thing about smoking, hypnotists have helped a lot of people stop smoking. And, you know, a person has to want to stop smoking. Hypnosis will aid in that process. So if you want to go see a hypnotist, fine, go do that. But it really comes from you. The fact of the matter is that the chemicals from smoking leave your body within 3 or 4 days or so. Smoking is not a physical addiction so much as it is a psychological addiction. So if you don't want to smoke, and I'm not directing this at any one person, by the way, it may sound like, because since Kathy brought it up, but I'm not directing this at her. I'm just directing at anybody who's listening. Anybody?
Well, I think I'm cutting out something.
My internet almost left me.
We're losing audio, Doug.
yeah, I'm on it. I just need to know whether I'm going to lose you. Just give me a moment. If you guys can still hear me, just hang tough for a moment. Let this stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Let it
John
recalculate.
Says we're back on. Well, it's my apparently it's my internet, which this morning it was going off several times, but it's been great all day and all evening. And of course, I was wondering whether I'm just going to give it a minute. So I'm just kind of rambling here just to make sure we're back on. I'm monitoring it. If you can, if anybody cannot hear me, write something in the chat. And if I do blank out, just let us know, and I'll pause, and we'll take
it.
Care of that.
Got it. Now John is just making just to kind of recap here. John is just saying in the chat room, his number one pet peeve is the them esteem that's connected to addictions, and being one of those being. Like, not quite what you understand what you're saying there, John, but it but driving behind.
Well, let's,
you know,
let's
what's
hang
behind
on for, with that one for just a moment. Let me finish my thought on the smoking
All
thing.
All right.
As I was saying, if you are a smoker and you don't want to smoke, then stop smoking. You need to determine why you want to stop smoking, and you need to focus on those benefits. And you know, people fight this. Oh, I need the patch. I need these drugs. I need hypnosis. I need this. But, you know, if you don't want to smoke, then don't smoke. And if you find, oh, you know, I would really like to have a smoke, but I want to stop. Don't play those games. If you're going to stop, then make that decision, a deliberate, intentional decision to stop. And when those, if those thoughts come into mind, oh, I wish I could have a cigarette, you say, stop. Cancel. That is not what I want. I enjoy the benefits of whatever it is, saving money, better health if that's what you want, you know, whatever the benefits are for you. So it may sound simplistic, but that is actually what it takes. It takes a person to make that decision and stick to it and not play mind games with themselves. So that's all I have to say on that. So let's now transition into what you were saying, Vicki.
Well, it's just that John was making a comment there. Perhaps you can grab that on chat. It's he said it's the them esteem that's connected to addictions, which is an angle.
Peer pressure.
It's sure. There's a lot of pressure, and that's how people get started. I mean, just the fact that you even become aware of something that's available to you, it comes through other people. You know, or social situations where you sit down and have a few drinks or any number of, you know, I say particularly social elements that get people started. I got to tell you, though, when I started smoking at age 11, I did it for control. And the reason I was drinking at age 11 was because it was there, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot to be said for you know, these other psychological issues and availability. Now, that doesn't mean to say we should, you know, do away with everything, because, you know, there's a difference between somebody who's 11 versus 21 or 30 or 40 and a maturity that goes on. But there is a lot to be said for them esteem, and availability happens to be part of that.
And those are good points. You know, the peer pressure can, especially through teenage and early 20s, can be a big thing on drinking too much or doing drugs or whatever. Depends on the scene. So let's talk about, you know, Vicki, I don't know if you had anything in mind from the alcoholic or the addict's point of view, things that might help them. We can maybe focus on that and then switch over to the other side, the relationship side.
You know, I've seen the inside of a lot of rehab centers, not just on my own behalf, but I have a family filled with it, and I've worked with addictions. It's been my life study. All I'll say to anybody who is an addict, you will quit when you want to. You will quit when there's something else of greater value.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true.
There's a... If it is your purpose and that is your relationship, then that is your relationship. What I ask of addicts is don't take other people on your ride.
Yeah, But that, of course, is not going to happen in reality. I mean, you know, and I'm going to, when I talk, I'm going to focus mostly on alcoholic behavior, which is pretty much the same as addict behavior. I mean, drug addict behavior. They're the same thing, only different, just different, substance, you know. I mean, alcoholism is a substance abuse as well. So we'll kind of talk about them in that way. And what you just said, and this is a concept or a nugget that really goes to both sides of the addict, those who are living or working with them and those who are addicts themselves. When the pain of change becomes less than the pain of remaining the same, we change. And there's so much more to it because we've got to look at who we are. This is why I teach the life leadership paragon, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, and self-completeness. The first of those is self-acceptance. We have to change who we are inside to change our behavior. When you want to change, if you change your inside world, your outside world will change too. So if you want to change your outside world, that is the effects of addiction and alcoholism, you got to change the inside world. There's a variety of reasons why people are addicts or you know, substance abusers, whatever the substance is. There's a variety of reasons, and there is no definitive reason why somebody is an alcoholic or why somebody's a drug addict. There's not, you know, the medical community cannot come up with one definitive reason. Some call it a disease. Others vehemently disagree and don't think it's a disease. And I personally view it as a disorder. I don't call it a disease because I don't think it is. I think it's a disorder. And
I'm with you on that.
And if you think about this, if we put a diabetic and an alcoholic on a deserted island and leave them there, who will die from their quote disease? And it's obvious that the diabetic will. So I don't look at it as a disease because I feel that, and many others, by the way, feel that that's really shirking responsibility. There is a difference, by the way, between heavy drinking and alcoholism. Heavy drinking is just that, but alcoholism is the compulsion to drink, and it's more serious. And again, medical science doesn't know all the answers. I don't know all the answers, but I'm trying to share some of the things that I have learned through the whole thing. So one of the things that I do know, and I can tell you without any hesitation, that being an alcoholic or an addict and being in a relationship with them, I don't even know the words to say. It literally kills the soul, and it's not fun for anybody involved. And so things have to be done. If you are a substance abuser and you're seeing the need for some changes, get some help. There's a variety of programs. I don't personally recommend AA because it's just wrong. But if that's where you got to go, I know that wasn't really much of an explanation, was it?
Well, just to say it's wrong, if I can just throw this in here.
Go for it.
It's very Christian based. Mm-hmm. It's limiting. It does continue to perpetuate a limitation of thought that it is for some people. It tends to, in my view, however people get started in AA and it fulfills a purpose, to me it's just pity party after a while.
Well,
it doesn't necessarily resolve to or encourage people to self-study and move forward in their lives. You know, it's kind of like the commiserating. So I have an issue. But again, I'm not going to judge it because it has served many people very well. And for that, that's a good thing.
You know, and it has worked for some people. I'll give you that. It is not as effective as they would lead you to believe. One of the biggest problems with AA and honestly with Codependence Anonymous and Al-Anon is that their first point is that we admit that we're powerless over alcohol. Well, you know what? In my experience, an alcoholic is anything but powerless over alcohol. They often, always determine when they're going to drink. They can not drink all day while they go to work, being a functional alcoholic, and they can hold it in all week, and they can binge on the weekends. There's all kinds of control about it. So, but the point of this is that there are many programs out there. So if you need those, go look at what there is. There's Sober Recovery is another one. Go look up soberrecovery.com. Look on the net. There's a lot of different methodologies, and one doesn't work for everybody, so find one that does work for you, and then stick with it, because it's not just your life on the line. If you're an active substance abuser in a relationship, you have kids, I can guarantee you right now that their life is hell. So is yours, but so is theirs. It is hell. And and if they're young kids and you don't get help, all you do is perpetuate the generational cycle. And you don't want to do that. You need to love them more. If you don't love yourself, then love them more. And until you can love yourself, and then make those corrections.
You know, if I can just inject one thing, Doug, if anyone has any kind of addiction problem, and I mean any kind of addiction problem, you can speak your voice and get an army of people to help you. Because there, people gravitate toward wanting to help others. It's a natural thing.
Yeah.
You tell your doctor, you know, you tell your friend, you go to a counselor. Look, there's any number of people will all be there in 2 minutes and send you to where you can get the best help for you.
Yeah.
So there's no other illness that gets more attention in this society than addiction. So
yeah.
It is. There is not a shortage of help.
Yeah. So, so we've talked about that side of it, and I don't know that I have a whole lot more to offer on that side of it, on the addict side, but I do have a lot to offer on those who are in a relationship with a substance abuser, because that's been obviously my experience, and it's been the focus of my research over the years. You know. You know, one of the biggest questions that come up is, why do people remain in toxic relationships? And there's, again, a variety of reasons. One of the big reasons that I wanted to talk about, especially with substance abusers being in a relationship with them, is what's known as the Stockholm Syndrome. And you may or may not be familiar, those listening, with the Stockholm Syndrome. So let me tell you what that means and how it applies to substance abuse and being in a relationship with them. The Stockholm Syndrome is actually named after an incident that occurred in Stockholm, Sweden, back in 1973. Two men had held four people hostage for 6 days in a bank holdup. And over this period, the hostages and their captors bonded with each other. And the hostages actually came to see their captors as protecting them from the police, believe it or not. You know, one of the hostages reportedly even became engaged to one of the captors after the fact. So, you know, psychologists were trying to figure out, why is this happening? And so they did some research, they did some studies, and they called this syndrome the Stockholm Syndrome after this incident. And let me explain the parts of the syndrome, and then apply them. These are the things that are necessary for the Stockholm Syndrome to take effect. There has to be a threat. Now, this must be a perceived threat to survival. And the belief on the part of the hostage that the captor is willing to carry out this threat. So we think about, and I'm just going to use alcoholic relationship as a generic term. It could mean a drug addict relationship too. In an abusive alcoholic relationship, there is a perceived threat to survival. It doesn't usually involve a threat to life, physical life, although sometimes it does. But usually there's this perceived threat to survival, and that is something considered to be of high value. And of course, this can include loss of custody of any children that might be involved, financial loss, including the home, means of living, a reputation with an extended family or community or religiously, loss of companionship, loss of a fairy tale dream, loss of family integrity, those kinds of things. So there has to be this threat, a perceived threat to survival must exist. Then there needs to be isolation. Isolation from perspectives other than those of the captor. This is an interesting thing because the captors will often control mundane daily activities. It's normal, discouraging the hostage or the, we'll call them the non-alcoholic, discourage them from working outside the home, monitoring expenditures, keeping track of mileage on the car, as I've heard about, making demands such as dinner on time, insistence on things being done to the alcoholic's specifications, extreme jealousy, monitoring where the hostage goes, who their friends are. It just goes on and on. Lots of control. So there has to be this isolation. The alcoholic tends to isolate the non-alcoholic or the codependent. There also has to be a kindness. So we have the threat, isolation, and then there's this kindness. And this is a perception of some small kindness from the captor. We'll bestow some small kindness on things. And I'm being told that I am breaking up. And I will pause for a moment just to make sure.
You're back, Doug.
Okay, so I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Do I need to repeat anything?
You were talking. We can just repeat those. That would be fear.
Okay.
Fear and isolation and kindness.
Oh, there's.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so hopefully we are now back on the air. Let me just tell listeners to try refreshing once again. Okay. All right, so John says we're back. And I'm going to just give it a minute, let everybody refresh before I reiterate. Well, it's not the Skype gods that hate me tonight. It's the Internet gods. And I love you so much. Why did you do this to me?
Some nights just go perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these nights that, we just got a gremlin or two, and that's all right. So you were saying, Doug, that there has to be a fear or a threat. There has to be the isolation, and then there has to be some kind of kindness.
Right. There has to be a perceived threat to survival, and it's not necessarily, being killed, murdered. Just your physical survival, isolation, will control all of your activities. There has to be a kindness, some kindness after they beat up on you or you have a big argument or whatever, you go through a tough time, just kind of kindness. Could be a tearful request for an apology and request for forgiveness. Any kind of a kindness like that. Then the fourth part of this is an escape. There has to be a perceived inability to escape. So the codependent perceives they can't get out of it. This is actually an interesting thing because they can't escape because if they do, they lose their means of livelihood. They lose their home. They have no way out. They have no marketable skills, perhaps. There's just no way out. So there has to be a perceived inability to escape. Now, these four different things, okay, a perceived threat to survival, isolation from perspectives other than the captor, a kindness bestowed by the captor, and a perceived inability to escape, these four things lead the hostage to an affinity. This is positive feelings between the captor and the hostage. And this is really a distorted and dysfunctional reciprocal affinity or bonding that develops between the captor and the hostage. The captor needs the hostage to satisfy distorted control issues. The hostage needs the captor for survival. So therefore, when the captor occasionally bestows a kindness toward the codependent in an effort to maintain control, she or he, whichever the case may be, ignores the captor's bad side and bonds to his or her positive side in an effort to maintain her psychological survival. So now that he or she's happy that survival is momentarily unthreatened, you know, then they now work harder than ever to keep their captor happy. And this really leads to even more isolation, because eventually, and not all that long, it doesn't take this that long, but the hostage will then begin to view life and the situation through the eyes of the captor. And the fourth thing lead to is this fear, the fear that any intervention by outside authorities will jeopardize the hostage's survival. So we've probably all seen people who are in these bad relationships, whether they're substance abuse or not, toxic relationship. We see that they resist getting out of it. They resist your help. You can be a kind friend trying to help them, you know, which is unfortunately offering unsolicited advice, but you're trying to help them and they resist your efforts. They even get angry at you. Why? Because they have a fear that you're going to jeopardize their survival. Again, their day-to-day living, finances, home, custody, whatever it happens to be. So the captor's motto is control. The hostage's motto is survival. This is the Stockholm Syndrome, and this is why so many people stay in abusive, substance abuse, alcoholic, drug, whatever, relationships. It is, everything I've been describing here really involves secondary gains. What are secondary gains? They're any kind of gain you get that is indirect. So if I don't fight my alcoholic wife and I just go with it and try to keep her happy, my secondary gains could be, well, I don't have to get a divorce and suffer that bad reputation among my family. Or other way around, if I'm a woman and I depend on my husband for a livelihood, my secondary gains are that I don't lose my income, I don't lose my livelihood, I don't lose my means of living.
You know, if I could just inject here,
please.
That when you are the victim or the enabler or at the hands of these extreme behaviors, it really lends to, you know, I have this tremendous compassion for the reality that's framed in that life experience, you know, and it's no different to me than somebody being raised in the church and you absolutely believe everything you're told. You're raised in the city and you've never seen a cow and you think, oh my God, it's, you know, a Neanderthal. It is a forming of a reality. There is an undercurrent, though, especially in this day and age when we have so much exposure to other kinds of lifestyles, even if it's on television, you know, obviously the internet and other forms now that weren't there years ago. We do know that there's a world out there, or, you know, the victim in this case, or the enabler, knows that there's a world out there. But this is how people frame the us and them. You know, there's always a separate reality, and it's, oh, those people.
Right.
So there's the reality begins to isolate itself and starts framing itself into, I am the only one that's real. And it just goes that step deeper. And I'll tell you, I know a lot of people never leave these situations. It is their existence. It is their reality. What generally happens in these cases that, you know, they do stay long periods of time is they get older. And when you get older, there's less attachment. And there becomes that, you know, the children leave, they go have their own lives, you have grandchildren, and geez, suddenly you're looking at auxiliary care and what have I done with my life? And I have seen numerous people who have been in long-term difficult relationships that leave when they're 70, 75, and it is astounding that they have taken that journey, you know, 40, 50, 55 years, and they finally have that epiphany. And it is unfortunate that there's so much damage done along the way, but I do really extend a lot of compassion to people who are in this kind of reality. It is real. And I can only imagine if you're in a war zone, that's real and it'll never end, except that you have a small kind of thread of hope, hope that over there there's going to be a better life, you know, hope. I know we're going to talk about that next week, but they keep hoping it'll get better. Of course, it never does.
No, because they don't take positive, proactive action.
But they also don't understand time.
Well,
one day turns into 10 years, and it's time. Along the way, as you've talked really, you know, a lot about, and I love this, it's the them esteem, because there is still always some kind of an emotional reward where, and that's a dysfunctional by itself, mm-hmm. you know, that it's the I'm special, I get an attention, and any kind of attention is better than no attention. So poor mom, you know, she has such a hard time, or oh, poor dad, you know, he just deals with that, or, you know, poor Auntie Joan. And is that, even that, oh, the poor thing. So when I say compassion, I don't mean pity.
Right.
Nothing pitiful about this. It's just a reality and a statement of fact that we lend compassion to a reality that people have built for themselves. So I just wanted to express that because, mm-hmm. you know, my heart goes out. Mind you, my heart goes out to born-again Christians, too. So same
right.
thing.
Well, you know, you mentioned something interesting, too. You mentioned that sometimes people in these relationships just stay in them until old age. And there's an interesting thing that can happen after decades together like this. It's called role reversal. And Stockholm syndrome, and this role reversal is not necessarily part of the Stockholm syndrome proper. It is something I've added to it from my own experience. My folks taught me this. They stayed in the relationship until my dad died back in 2002. He was the codependent. My mom was the alcoholic. And what happened was role reversal. And what that means is the hostage now becomes the captor, and the captor becomes the hostage. The cycle starts all over again, but it's in a unique way. Again, they're like 11 years, spent perhaps decades together. They're so comfortable now in this distorted and dysfunctional relationship, they basically take turns at playing the roles of the captor and the hostage. There's bad blood usually between them.
Punishment.
Yes, you know, and it goes back and forth. And the tragedy in this is that they've lived out their days feeling all used up, knowing on some deeper level that they sacrificed all those precious years of potential accomplishment by remaining in a pointless and miserable relationship that consumed their souls and, frankly, extinguished their spirits. And
yes.
This is exactly what I observed, and I've not just observed it with my folks, but well. And so,
well, you know what? Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Doug. Go ahead. I've just observed it over 40 years of counseling people of all ages and all kinds of dynamic. And you're absolutely right. That's what happens. It does a role reversal if they stay in it. And as soon as the one of them weakens, everything shifts.
Mm-hmm.
That power base. And then there's a sadness that goes. And I know, I hear this very often. Well, you know,
Vicky, are you there?
Okay, I'm back.
Okay,
I'm
not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna fight this anymore tonight. So while I still have a minute back on the air, folks, I'm gonna go ahead and conclude the show. We'll pick this up in a future episode. I'm really sorry about the internet stuff. There's just not much I can do about it, and I don't want to keep going in and out. Let me.
Yeah.
So,
Everybody's saying they're refreshed. And
yeah.
You know, maybe we can move on a little bit to next week's show.
Real quick, and folks, if you do hear us cut out, please join us next week. Ultimately, a very important show. Well, there'll be more information on mchschurch.org. And now, Vicki, and if you hear us cut out, we're probably not going to be back because of the Internet. Vicki, go ahead and let's milk it while we can.
Let's milk it while we can for sure. Next week, if you have a candle, if you have anything that smells good to you that you like, some people like sage, some people, you know, if you have sweetgrass, if you have any of these things, you know, any kind of tincture, something that some people like lavender. It's whatever makes you feel good that can give you a better focus. We are going to go through our little celebration and our version of prayers for the show. We're going to discuss hope, faith, hope, and trust. And we're going to project for all these wonderful good things for what's coming up in this next cycle of 13 moons, as we will. And so it'll be a great show. So here's the thing. Very often in my culture, I put together little pouches and I put them above the door every year. Mistletoe is a very powerful herb, if you can find any. Put it next to something like hawthorn or oak. And this is bringing out the good properties of the mistletoe. Little white pouch, little piece of fabric, you know, a piece of red ribbon. I'll teach you that next week, if you like. So, you know, you just kind of do your little prayer over it and put it over your door. It's just a focus. It's a way to intend energy and give it some kind of a flow. But here's the thing. If you look back in your own culture, you might find some really interesting things that resonate with you that you might like to resurrect on the Yuletide and on this winter moon. So please do a little bit of research. And this is a wonderful opportunity for us to bring some of these wonderful past cultural traditions into the now. You'll find that most everything you see is from some kind of basic old tribal culture. So get something that feels good to you. You don't necessarily take from other cultures, although it can be helpful. Just try to build up your own. It resonates with your internal DNA, your internal memory, so to speak. So any of these things can be a good focus, and we'll get to it next week. I'm really looking forward to next week's show. It's the most precious time of the year for me and my family, so I'm excited.
All right. So, folks, we're very sorry about the interruptions tonight. I wish I could do something different, have some control over, but I don't. I am, yes, powerless over the Internet connection. But if you want more information, please visit empoweredrecovery.com. If you want more information on alcoholic relationships, empoweredrecovery.com. And we appreciate those who've listened to us live tonight and kind of endured these interruptions. We thank those who are listening to the archive as well. Please join us next week, as Vicki so nicely talked about, for our winter solstice ceremony of cynosure.
Our cynosure, Luna Prevailing. It's that actually is a very accurate title, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our own, MCHS own. So that's great.
All right, folks, you have a great night, great week, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
White lights, everybody. Good night.